You're listening to The Cultural Hall with your hosts, Richie T. Stedman and Ashley Garvey Smith. It's a show about Mormon stuff.
Nephi! Ella! Samuel! Give us land to live righteously!
It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall, episode 41. Reno Mahe, former Brighton High School football player here in Utah, played for the Philadelphia Eagles, for those who don't know who he is, and also has found himself in a bit of trouble legally. And
really?
We get into it, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Gas trouble. I'll let the blocks 2 and 3 explain what that is.
Okay.
And we get to find out what he's doing now with his life as well, since his retirement from the NFL. So that's coming up in the second and third blocks. How are you doing? Good?
I'm doing really well.
Yeah?
Yeah. So I was thinking recently about stuff that we do in Mormon culture that kind of leak into the rest of our lives. But have you noticed, because you do a lot, you're in the entertainment business.
Sure.
Do you have people come up to you and ask you to do things for them?
Yeah,
and
for free.
Expect you to do it for free.
Absolutely.
Do you think that is because of the Mormon culture?
Do I think that it's because of the Mormon culture?
Because we do callings, because a lot of things that we do in the church, we do for free. So, you know, the callings that we do are for free. And when we do activities as a church, anything that we do is volunteer based.
Yes.
Yeah.
I had never thought about it until just now, but yes, I do think that.
Do you think it's only that way in Utah, or do you think it's that, like, if someone in another state were to ask someone to come and sing at their wedding?
I would think that it's probably less common in other states for people to think it'd be free. I'm not sure.
I agree.
That's kind of a fascinating thing. I'm not sure that, I don't know. But anymore, I've had to start to be like, hey, you know what? I can't do it for free.
Right. I'm that way too.
That's the hardest.
It is really hard. And some people get really offended that you won't do it for free. But when you think of the time that is spent, so we're talking about photography, music, anything in the, and you know, emceeing
things,
right?
Sure.
Anything that has to do with the entertainment business or, you know, photography or whatever. People spend their time and their own money, their gas, and so it's, don't expect people to use their talents for you for free.
But then you also got to do the other side then too, because how many times have you not felt well, and there's the doctor in the ward who you call up and go, you know, I'm not feeling well.
Can you write me a prescription?
Yeah. Well, I don't know that I'd go that far necessarily, but it's like, hey, I'm not feeling well. I mean, it's the same kind of thing. That guy went to school, he's got bills to pay, and he's a doctor for a reason.
No, that is really true. And there are a lot of things that I will do for free.
Yeah.
And so but I do, I have had to draw a line and say, I cannot do this unless I'm at least compensated for gas or something.
Sure. Throw me something, please.
Right. Yeah.
Interesting topic. Weigh in on it. Richie@theculturalhall.com or on Facebook, search The Cultural Hall. Twitter @TheCulturalHall or follow us on Pinterest. Love to have you do it. Coming back in the second and third block, it's Reno Mahe, a former NFL player. It's a great interview. Check it out.
Thanksgiving Point Gardens presents Follow His Light, Friday, May 11th through Saturday, June 16th, celebrating their newest garden exhibit, Light of the World, with special Mother's Day activities. Open from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Find more info at thanksgivingpoint.org.
Hey, it's the second block of the Cultural Hall, and have you ever met those people, Bree, where they're the same age as you? Because, our guest here is 10 days older than I am.
Ooh.
And I look at it and I go, okay, look at all that this person has done in their life.
Make you feel like a slacker.
And you just are like, geez, you know, I got a good job and take care of my family, okay, but, you know, what is this? And I noticed that here in the makeshift cultural hall is Reno Mahe, or as Wikipedia tells me, Sateke Reno Mahe Jr. And for those who don't know, he played football at BYU, also Dixie State, and we'll get into that a little but I remember, because I went to Hillcrest High School here in Salt Lake, so I remember Reno as the enemy, as the really good player on
rival.
Brighton High School, that we were just like, oh, God. Someone break his legs or something.
We get a bounty on him.
Yeah, can we get the bounty out on him? What's that coach from New Orleans? Can we get him to come coach for us? Yeah. get him to come coach for us. So let's just start. Born and raised in Utah?
Nope, born and raised in Los Angeles. Well, oh. Not raised, but born in Los Angeles, Inglewood. That's why I get a lot of slack for being a Laker fan. Mm-hmm. But I was actually born in L.A. Lived there till about 12 years old.
And Inglewood's a pretty tough neighborhood, isn't it? Parts of it, or is it, or does it get a reputation?
You don't realize it's tough. Being born there and living there, you don't realize, yeah, this is scary. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't growing up. I mean, I would walk to I'd walk to school and walk to friends' house, and you'd never think twice about it. I remember
until friends started disappearing because they got shot, stuff like that. And then
no,
like,
but it's not even that. It's you don't even. I don't. As a kid, you don't watch the news. Mm-hmm. You don't. And the news wasn't so prevalent back then, where they just showed you everything that was going on. Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't think there's probably times we didn't have a TV in our house. So sure. you didn't see how bad the world could be. You know, I was just a kid. We'd play in elementary school. Mm-hmm. And I remember coming and visiting Utah as a kid.
Because family was here?
Yeah, we had family that lived here in Utah.
Okay.
Going to Glendale, mm-hmm. West Valley.
Which is downtown, for those who don't know or maybe listening outside of Utah. Glendale is right downtown, kind of on the west side.
They'll consider these areas the rough part of Utah.
Uh-huh. Right.
Some people do. And I remember coming in just thinking, wow, this place is awesome. Like, just thinking how nice these places are. They had the basements, they had the upstairs, and you're just like, wow, my aunt's really living it up.
Yeah.
And then you move out here, and you moved to, when we first moved out here to Utah when I was 12, we moved to West Valley. And I was thinking, dude, these people are cool. Like, it's like Silver Spoon over here.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved from West Valley to Brighton. And I
was Cotwood Heights.
Oh, I was living in the ghetto. I mean, not only did I live in the ghetto in L.A., but people, they kind of look at West Valley and Glendale as a tough neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know. But yeah, anyways.
So, you're fine. We'll go anywhere with you, Reno. We got no agenda as far as this goes. So what was it that brought you from Inglewood to Utah?
Oh, the riots.
Was it really?
Well, and there we had family here. So mm-hmm. we moved to North Carolina for a little bit, for a few months. I don't know how long it was. And then we ended up in Utah. Family. It was just a family thing. My mom had brothers. My dad had a sister lived here. And they said, come to Utah. There's a lot of opportunity. You know, all the Mormons. We were Mormons. So mm-hmm. all the Mormons are here. And when me and my older sister came out here, we really enjoyed it. And then my older brother played at the U, so it was just kind of a natural fit. And
Born and raised in the church then?
Yes. My dad was a convert.
How did we find him?
My dad?
Yeah, how did we get your dad?
My mom.
Your mom?
Yep.
Okay. How did we get your mom?
That's funny, because my grandma and grandpa, my grandmother was raised a member. I don't know how she became, her family became members.
Okay.
This was back on the island of Tonga.
Okay.
But my
I was going to say, you look a little darker than me. So.
Yeah. We're from the friendly islands of Tonga. But my grandpa was getting ready to go into, what is it, for Catholic priests, where they go to the ministry or
okay.
they go to something where they become, you know, where they're going to become priests. And he ends up meeting my grandma. And
he's like, forget that. Celibacy. That's one hot, sweet Tonga.
So
true love.
He was outcast. Like,
wow.
He marries my grandma and becomes Mormon and totally exiled from his family type deal, from what I was told, and ended up being a bishop for over a decade, forever.
Oh, wow. And so, out in California?
Out in California, yeah. Okay. So a lot of cool, different cool stories of how they got to go get sealed in the
like
temple.
What? Tell me.
I'll probably butcher it a little bit, but my mom told me some cool stories of when they were getting ready to go to the temple. It was a temple in New Zealand. But the trip that they took, first they sold everything. They sold everything they owned to get enough money to take a boat ride, a plane ride, and a bus ride just to get to the temple. I want to say the New Zealand temple, but they like flew to Fiji, then they bus somewhere or boat to Fiji or something like that. Then they flew somewhere, bus somewhere just to get to the temple.
Mm-hmm.
And the cool part was they did, after everything they sold and they didn't have enough, there were a few, I don't know how much money short back in those days, but there was a guy, it was a Caucasian guy. Mm-hmm. And my mom could tell you his name, gave my grandpa an envelope to give him everything. I ended up meeting this guy like last year.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah.
It was kind of a cool deal. I got to meet him and his offsprings. And I was just like, his last name was Christensen, I remember now, who was back in Tonga. And when I ran into the guy and he was telling me who his grandparents were, he was asking me if I was from Tonga. And as the connection was coming, I was like, your grandpa gave my grandpa money for them to go get sealed.
Oh, wow.
Like, holy, it was cool. Cow. It was cool stories like that. Anyways, they had a chance to go to do work at BYU Hawaii.
Okay.
So the church was going to pay for my parents or my mom's family to go to PCC, do the Tongan section or something like that.
The Polynesian Cultural Center, for those who don't know.
And I was told that she didn't do it. She didn't leave the island.
My
grandmother wanted to give her older brother the chance first.
Huh.
And sent him first. And then she ended up coming after on there. They migrated to LA. And that's how we all worked our way to LA. And my dad somehow got to LA. His family was through Samoa. My mom and dad met in LA.
So what is it? What's the church like there in Inglewood?
It's pretty strong. I think there, you know, we actually had a Tongan ward there. I remember growing up in the Tongan ward. So I don't know. I think they're still pushing along.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fighting that good fight.
Sure. And so then you come here to Utah. You live in West Valley first, and then you move over to Cottonwood Heights. That's quite the jump. Was it dad got a new job, that kind of thing, or how did that work out?
You know, I was in...
Or was it so you could be in a better school to play football?
Yeah.
Was it?
It was more... I swear it was like right out of a Karate Kid movie. I'll never forget driving from West Valley up I-215 in our little blue pickup truck, and I'm like holding furniture down. Back then, you didn't have to have a seatbelt. Yeah. You know
right.
what I mean?
So oh, yeah.
Oh,
I just remember...
Good. So you're in the back of your like little Datsun or something like that, holding stuff underneath your
arms. It was a little Toyota truck. And I just remember holding down furniture as we're driving up I-215 going east, mm-hmm. and getting off like 6200 South up there. Yeah, it was crazy. But it was more, my mom and dad had a friend or relative that lived in the Brighton area, okay. The Masseys. And they just happened to talk to my mom and dad one day about some stuff and told them, you know what, your kid will be better off coming to school up there. It was definitely a better, in the long short end things, it was a better situation to where there was about five guys that I grew up in West Valley. We were deacons together, mm-hmm. Teachers, and every single one of them locked up. One died. So it was better. It was better to go up there and get out of that surroundings.
But pretty culturally different, I would think, whereas the west side of Salt Lake, West Valley in particular, is a lot of different kind of cultures mixed. And the east side is very Caucasian, wealthy, middle to upper class. I mean, was that difficult being like, that guy doesn't look like the rest of us?
It was, and there was so many different situations like that.
Especially within the church, because I mean, I'm from that neighborhood.
That's right.
So for me, I would, like, until I went on my mission to Cleveland, Ohio, like, I saw more black people or people of any sort of color in the airport in Cleveland than I ever had in my entire life. And so for me, it was always kind of odd to be like, oh, hey, look, someone that's not white at church. You know what I'm saying? And it's silly, and I kind of feel embarrassed about it. Yeah. But it's one of those things where it's just like, that I'm sure in that it's like, okay, does anyone notice the difference here in this chapel right now? It's the Mahi family. Yeah.
It was... There was a lot of different situations up there to where, as a kid, you don't really think too much about it. I think here and there it bugged you, mm-hmm. but you just learn from it, you know. And you just, here's my stance with it. My mom, my wife thinks I'm one of the most racist people out there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I tell
is your wife white, or is she?
She's half Tongan, half white.
Okay.
But it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, I'm racist towards everyone, so really I'm not racist.
Right. I hate everybody.
Yeah.
Right.
But my
no, Reno's not like that at all.
No, my thing was, when it came to actual just Caucasians, that my stance in life right now is that I've had so many Caucasians that have been so good to me, that the couple ignorant ones out there, mm-hmm. whatever.
But you'd get that stuff, I'm sure. Even, yeah. You know,
well, I mean, in the neighborhood I live in now, you know what I mean? It's right. It's something that I've got a buddy that we were just at lunch with, and we have our little fun discussions about, he'll say, you know, the white man is the only unprotected race out there, right? Group of people right now.
Sure.
And there's some truth to that. You know what I mean? But I told him, I was like, you know, one thing you'll never know, you'll never understand, is that I was born with this disadvantage and you were born with that advantage. Mm-hmm. And he's looking at me like, what are you talking about? I was born brown. Mm-hmm. Like, it was nothing that that I can change. There's nothing, but there's some parts in this world that it still has an effect. And it does on myself. Like, there's times where we're kind of messing around in the environmental game, and we purposely take a token white guy with us. Because people look at us, one, oh, you're just a football player, you know. Sure.
So you're speaking professionally now. You're diving into the environmental thing, okay?
Or whatever business we get into, if it's not specific towards football or whatever their perception of us is, then you know, that's like the saying goes: perception is reality.
Sure.
And great people, but it's just the way we were brought up. You know what I mean? And I had it in high school. I remember a girl I was dating. She told me that, yeah, her best friend was a neighbor across the street, and her best friend's parents were telling her, oh, I can't believe they'd let him date that guy.
Oh, like, gosh.
That. And wow. Specifically, like, you know, that minority. And these are church-going people. You know what I'm saying? And
in the late 90s.
Yeah, this was in the...
Yeah, this isn't... Like, yeah, we're not talking... Reno and I are not like, you know, we're not 1960s and getting blown away by a fire hose. Nah. We're talking, you know, 1990s.
Right. And to think it doesn't have enough, you know, that it's not prevalent out there, I think you're also being ignorant to the fact that it is.
Right.
You know, and we get... It's like I'm in a Tongan ward.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have a Tongan stake. We have one in Utah County. There's two Tongan stakes in Utah County, and there's one Tongan stake in Utah County, and there's two Tongan stakes in Salt Lake County.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always questions about, well, why do you guys get to have a stake, you know, and this and that. But for us, there's some leaders, like my stake president, President Mackay, is one of the, I mean, just, you love the man.
Mm-hmm.
He could never hold a calling in his neighborhood.
We think so, really?
He would never be a stake president.
Hmm.
And a lot of it is not necessarily the color of skin, but language barriers.
Sure.
Culture, a lot of the things that he would do and say might not go over so well.
Yeah, or people just don't understand or don't appreciate. Understand.
Exactly.
Is that why there are those Tongan wards? Is just the culture is so different between?
I'm always curious about that. I don't know. I don't know.
Because although the color of your skin a little bit darker, you seem just like anyone, you know, anyone that would be in any of my neighborhoods.
But I think for me, I've been able to, my parents broke that barrier by moving us up there.
Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you take one of my cousins who still lives out, who might not be able to associate like this.
Sure.
You know, and it's, I guess it comes back to the product of your environment, you know, to where I have some family members who think people are always out to get them. And it is what it is.
Yeah. Have you ever had any sort of what would you call it? Not barrier, what's the word, of challenge towards your testimony because of, you know, like blacks in the priesthood? I would assume that Tongans kind of fell into that too, or maybe that's my ignorance and I don't know.
No. For us, no. I think I hold people accountable for their own actions, and I don't usually hold that against our church.
Cool.
You know, for me, it's pretty simple. Our church is based on Christ. Is Christ racist? No.
Yeah. Good point.
Does Christ care for this or that or your political stance? Or, you know, your son? No, he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? The people in the church are far from perfect. But is our church based on a perfect person? Yes. And that's as simple as I can give it to you as far as my testimony, to where I think, will a bishop mess up? Will I mess up? I always mess up.
Sure. And maybe we'll get into that a little bit here later. So I want to ask you this though. So you move from West Valley over to Cottonwood Heights, and then is football just the next natural progression because your brother had played it, or what made you want to get into football?
My dad said that was my ticket out of our situation. Like, if I was going to take our family to another level as far as progression within the family and everything, it was football. It was football, football, football. There was no other way of, it was football. Yeah. He didn't play football.
So you're saying it was football.
It was football. And I didn't have to clean dishes. I didn't have to clean my house, clean my room, do the yard. I had to go work out. I had to go.
Really? So you got excuse from all that stuff to just
play football.
Did you ever lose the love of the sport because of that? Because of the pressure?
Nope.
That's awesome.
I loved football. I was good at football. And I think that it wasn't so bad back then as I see it now for kids. Where?
Wait, how do you mean?
I think, you know, I had a relative messaged me this morning, and she was like, "Hey, my son's 9. You know, do you do training?" Mm-hmm. And I was like, "He's 9?" Like, I'm thinking to myself as I'm reading this message, "Your son is 9, and you're asking for him to go do training."
Mm-hmm. Let him be a boy, is what you're kind of thinking.
That's exactly what my message was. I was like, yeah. You know, first off, let your kid be a kid.
Right.
You know, these parents are paying for these kids to go get all this training, and maybe some of these kids do. But our training was monkey bars and tag and hide and go seek and playing Rambo. And I was running.
I want to know what that. What is that?
Rambo. This is where you have two sides, and if you get captured, you get put in their prison.
Okay.
And then they have to come and try to. And this is throughout the neighborhood. It's like, oh, geez. You're running. You're trying to get people.
Right.
But if you come to and you save them, you pull them out of the prison. You can.
Oh, cool.
So and these were things we did as a kid, and maybe it was just because we didn't have the PS3s. Right. We didn't have the Nintendos, we didn't have the Wii's, mm-hmm. You know, we didn't have these things growing up, so we stayed active. That was our training.
Right.
I mean, I was jumping roofs, jumping, you know, fences. Like, we were running, we were active. And so my advice to her was, tell your husband, look up some YouTube stuff. You know, YouTube, you can tell you everything you want to do.
Sure.
You
want make a bomb or train a football player. Well,
you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Right.
And have your husband take your son out and just go out, you know, bonding time, family time, but get out there, you know. And so,
well, and it paid off for you too. I'm reading just some of this stuff for people who don't know. Again, this is Reno Mahe that we're visiting with. You played football at Brighton High School, where you were named the all-state player twice, and then as a senior you led your team to the 10-1 record, and you were the Gatorade Utah Player of the Year. That's not just like playing tag or playing Rambo in the neighborhood. That's a pretty big deal. And an MVP, an all-region and region MVP honors in your final high school season. And you played basketball too, right?
Yeah, I was actually a better basketball. No, just kidding. I'm a better church basketball player.
Yeah. Get in there with little swears and some elbows.
Yeah. But I don't know. It's one of those things where it all correlated for me. Like, playing tag, mm-hmm. It was like, I didn't want to get touched. So when guys tried to come tackle me, it was like tag, like dodging it. I mean, there's a lot of different correlations, but I did. My dad was a great rugby player. My mom was very athletic. So I came from a family of, I had good genes, you know what I mean? And my mom and dad taught, I mean, I never liked to act like I did it, but they it was hard work. Like, mm-hmm. If you talk to my teammates, they're like, man, he never lifted. Mm-hmm. Man, he never worked out. You know, there's things I did on my own. No one knew when I went to the school at nights and ran and did things on my own, but it took a lot of work.
Cool. Well, coming back in the second block of the Cultural Hall, we're going to talk about your time at BYU and then also your time in the NFL. So that's coming back here in the second block.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
All right. So, you know, we kind of talked about where you were raised and coming up, being to Utah, you know, going through high school and everything like that. And so then you graduate from high school. And when most kind of Mormon kids would have thought about going on a mission, you decided to concentrate on football. Let's jump into that time of your life.
If we go back just a little bit.
Okay.
I grew up a Utah fan. My older brother played at the U. Mm-hmm. So I was real close with Coach Mack, and I'm a Utah guy. I used to wear my Utah jacket. My older brother got me to Provo.
Yeah.
Wear it on campus. I was just a little punk.
Yeah.
You know, a little punk kid. Just, man, I'm a Utah guy.
Yeah, you don't know.
Yeah.
And say something to me.
Yeah. BYU sucks, yeah. You know. And then it got to the point where I had to start, I was getting offers to play, you know, college football. And
where else besides BYU and Utah?
It was pretty much just the Utah schools.
Really?
BYU, Utah, Utah State. You know, I took some trips to Washington, other schools outside of Utah, but it was mainly the full ride scholarships were just in-state schools. And I went on a recruiting trip to the U, and I told Coach Mack, I'm coming. You know, yeah, Utah.
Yeah.
Been a Utah guy my whole life. And then the week after, I was scheduled to take a BYU visit on my recruiting trip. And it's one of those things where I just wanted to go because it was free meal. They wine and dine. Not wine, obviously, at BYU. But,
yeah.
they give you the treatment.
Was it wine at the U?
Yeah, just kidding.
But no, it's like being a celebrity, I would imagine. It's like, I would like popcorn. Yeah. Oh, Mr. Mahi would like popcorn, please. Here's
exactly.
Your popcorn,
so,
that kind of thing.
So as a 17-year-old kid at the time, I was like, yeah, I want to take my recruiting trip. This is sweet, you know? And so I take my trip to BYU, and it was cool. Again, got my Utah jacket on. It's like, BYU, whatever. But thanks for the free food, snowmobiling, and all this cool stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's cool. Take you to do.
And you wore the Utah jacket.
And I had my Utah jacket.
Wow.
So they knew. My older brother played at the U, so they all knew. And I remember being in the office with Coach Edwards. You have a meeting with the head coaches right at the end of your visit before you leave. That's the last thing you do. The head coach sits you down, tells you, the last little spiel about why their school is so great.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was just like, oh, thanks for the visit, coach. You know, all this stuff was cool. And as we get ready to walk out, as we're walking out, my mom turns around and it was something like, go tell them you're coming here.
What?
And I was like,
no.
Whatever. Yeah. She's like, don't make me tell you again.
Whoa,
and
really?
So I turn around, walk in, sit down, and the coach, my mom says I'm coming here.
Oh my goodness. Smart man.
And so that essentially that's what happened.
That was what it was. See, the Wikipedia thing talks about, the University of Utah offered you to play defense and the BYU wanted you to play offense, yeah. And you wanted to go the offensive route. And that makes that sound like that's what the decision was. But really, yeah. It was your mom saying.
Yeah, that was more of a elaborate version of.
That was a way to tell the story so it didn't have to be that your mom said which college to go to.
I'm older enough now to where I can just be like, well, the real truth was my mom told me I had to go there.
But why? Did she ever tell you? Did she have like a spiritual moment where she felt that you
funny?
Should go?
That's a great question. It never came up again. Like it never dawned on me why she did that. I had I had some close friends that just went to Hawaii last week for spring break. They're in Hawaii and I called my parents up and I said, hey, we've got some real dear friends coming out. Please take care of them.
So your folks live in Hawaii now?
Yes, okay. My folks live in Hawaii. My mom works at BYU Hawaii.
Cool.
And so my mom and dad, they hook up for a couple of days, give them the red carpet treatment, totally. And this story comes up. And that's why I remember it now, because he came back and he's telling me the story. He's like, dude, and he's a big BYU guy. And he's like, your mom told me about, the whole recruiting thing and you going to BYU. And she said that, he was saying, I love this about your mom. And she was saying that she didn't care about football. She was worried about my soul. And I was like,
wow.
That's why she did it. So she, it's like a mother's intuition, and anyways, leading up to my time at BYU, the goal was to go on a mission.
Mm-hmm.
And my whole goal was my first year, I was going to make a name for myself. To where when I came back from my mission,
people would be waiting for you.
Waiting for me. That is still so. I was young. I was only 18 day of graduation from high school. So I had a whole year of college to make a name for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And everything started out great. Fall camp started out great. I was probably sixth on the depth chart. But as fall camp continued, I got more and more comfortable, and the coaches had more and more trust in me. And so by the first game, it was against, I'll never forget, it was against Alabama. Mm-hmm. We were playing against Sean Alexander. It was like, oh, 70, 80,000 people out there in Alabama. It was real football. Like,
it was right in Tuscaloosa then?
Yes, cool. It was right there in whatever the area is.
It's Tuscaloosa, trust me. I did my research before we sat down.
I don't think I can say that. That's what I'm not going to say.
I know, me either.
Here, sound it out with me. I'll write it.
Tuscaloosa. No, but anyways, I got to dress for the game. And as a true freshman, I got to actually travel to the game. So it was a cool deal for me. It was like, all right. And getting into the game, I'm thinking I'm going to play the whole first half. I didn't get one play.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of, I never forget sitting there in the halftime thinking, man. But I remember part of me was just like, no, you'll be all right. You know, just, you'll be okay. Just have a little faith. Things will work out. Mm-hmm. Probably early third quarter, mid third quarter, couple of the running backs just started drop one
injuries
cramps.
Oh, cramps.
It wasn't necessarily big time injuries, but it was like a cramp. One guy fumbled, and so I got my shot, and so I started playing, had a couple good runs. I ended up scoring a touchdown in that quarter, and then it kind of just propelled the rest of the football season to where I got a lot of playing time the rest of the year, and really plan was kind of falling into place. Mm-hmm. The last game of the year, we qualified for a bowl game. We're getting ready to go a bowl game. The starting tailback gets expelled. This is when Ronnie Jenkins got expelled from school.
And what did he get expelled for?
His girlfriend.
Okay.
Yeah. He had an issue first, and then it happened again, so he got expelled. And then I became the starter for the bowl game, and that was the time where everyone was asking me whether you're going to stay and play next season.
Right, because you're starting in a bowl game.
You're
right.
You
can go knock doors and tell people about the Book of Mormon.
Right.
And then, you know?
So I had from the bowl game was around January till June. There's 6 months there where it's, you're going to stay and play football, or you're going to go serve a mission.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're going to be the starting tailback now. And for, you know, however long that period of time, it went from, no, I'm going to go on my mission to, I'm going to stay and play football. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just little by little. I'm going to stay and play football. By the time I made my decision, I was going to stay and play football. Not even a month later, and it was around May or June, I get kicked out of school.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was crazy how things worked out that way. And so now I'm sitting out. I'm not even playing football or going on a mission. And now I have a kid on the way.
Right.
And so it.
So for those who didn't put the keys, the bits and pieces there together, was kicked out of school for honor code.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. You can't do married stuff until you're married.
Yeah. It is the moral of that story.
Exactly.
That's got to be a hard thing. I mean, I bet you probably thought about that once or twice. I remember a time in college that I had where, and I don't play football or am I athletically inclined at all, but I remember having the distinct impression that I should make one choice and instead made a completely different choice, and then can almost trace back a series of events to the one choice that I made that, you know, was between what I knew I should do and what I, you know, really shouldn't have done. I mean, do you see that woman, as far as the honor code, is your wife, right?
No.
No, she's not.
No,
okay.
She's not my wife.
So
she was a girl I was dating in high school before I went to BYU.
Okay. So what is that like? I mean, we've talked about it. When we had Jan Jorgensen on, we talked briefly about, like, Jan Jorgensen, who also played football at BYU, talked about, you know, just athletes and the honor code. And specifically at that time, we talked about Brandon Davies. But what is it like being the actual subject of that? Because, I mean, it's got to be people, you know, what did you do, first of all? Because it could be a wide range of things. I mean, what's the whole experience like?
I don't think it was as bad for me as it was for Brandon Davies. I think it was bad. At the time, it was bad.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember the hardest part for me was not necessarily football. It wasn't having a kid come in. My hardest part, I think, and it was a little backwards kind. Not necessarily backwards, but I think the hardest part for me was disappointing my dad.
Mm-hmm. And you felt like you did?
Yeah. Like, just feeling like I disappointed my parents. I embarrassed our family, you know. And it was something that, because of football, my family was put on this pedestal. You know, I was a true freshman having great success in football. And you get put on this pedestal by people. And then when you buy into this deal, and then when it gets swept from underneath you, it's a hard fall. it was definitely, it was, that was probably the hardest part for me, was just knowing how bad I not only my parents, but my family as a whole, you know, my aunts and uncles, my, you know, my relatives, mm-hmm. Disgracing our family name, so to speak. And it's big in our culture.
Yeah. Would you take it back?
No.
Would you make a different decision?
I would go on my mission.
Really?
Whether I make a mistake later, you know, all the different mistakes I've made in life. My only regret in life to this day was not going on my mission. That was my, you know, it's not something I can do again. Obviously you can go when you're married and what have you, but sure. Being 19 and not going on my mission is my biggest regret and my only regret. I mean, I've made a lot of mistakes, but the things I've learned from those, you know, have made me who I am today. But as far as not going on my mission is probably the biggest regret I have.
Do you think it was just the football that made you not decide not to go? I mean, it's a pretty hard choice. Was there other things weighing in, or was it just, man, I'm this football success thing and I'm sticking around?
Girls.
Yeah. Was it? I mean, yeah. I guess that's what I was wondering. But was that part of the factor?
I think a lot of that was a direct relation to football.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where right. It was just, I don't know, girls just love football.
Yeah, and football players, and good-looking yeah. football players. We haven't talked about Reno being a pretty good-looking guy, and charming,
has been.
Oh, stop it. So let's move on then. So that's in the past. Let's move past it. So then you get to go to Dixie State.
No, actually, I go to UVU.
Oh, UVU, okay.
Or UVSC at the time.
Okay.
So I'm at UVSC at the time, working my way to try to get back to BYU.
Okay.
Honor coach says, nope, you haven't grown up yet.
Really?
Yep.
So it was like, no, I feel like I've grown up. Nope, yeah. You haven't. No, come on, I really feel like.
Something like that. It was more like, yeah, you're right, I haven't grown up. I still need some growing up to do.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't get back for that next year.
Mm-hmm. What happened to Utah?
Going to Utah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they wouldn't have cared.
Right. What's the story there?
Why not go to Utah instead? Yeah.
So yeah. From BYU, you know, to Utah.
Part of me wanted to go back and finish what I started.
At BYU.
And prove to them. Probably a little bit, right?
Not necessarily to them, but to myself.
Right.
Anyways, long story short, I go from UVU to Dixie because I didn't want to waste a year of football. So I go to Dixie. And the one thing about Utah is you have to sit 2 years because it's an in-conference transfer.
Oh.
And I didn't want to do that. And so, but I ended up going to Dixie to play a year. Played my sophomore year there because I redshirted at UVU. Went to Dixie, played my sophomore year, and then I had a chance to go anywhere in the country after that.
Because just an amazing junior college season?
Yeah, well, I mean, when you go and play D1 as a freshman, then you redshirt, and then you go and play junior college level after playing against Alabama, it's a whole different game. And so I had a great year. I did. I had a real good year there. And so I got offers. USC, NC State, I had just about anywhere. I could have went anywhere. Mm-hmm. But one of the big reasons was my wife. I was dating her while I was at Dixie. She's at BYU at the time playing volleyball there. She was probably the biggest reason, and on top of just wanting to go back to BYU and finish what I started. Right. So
then you do, and you have just an amazing junior year. Amazing yep. junior year.
So then I do. I had a great junior year. It was probably one of the most rewarding football experiences as far as getting back on the field at BYU, considering all of what I went through in 2 years.
Spiritual experience?
Very spiritual experience. And I don't even think it was a touchdown. I think it was just a catch. Mm-hmm. Like getting my first catch back in BYU and just feeling like, okay, you know, that part of life was a great learning experience. Mm-hmm. You know, and it taught me a lot about football. And not just football, but how much football means in my life. And it wasn't very much at all anymore. And so it was something that I needed to learn before I went to the NFL. So,
and you did that. So senior year wasn't as good though.
And that was just being lazy.
Was it?
Yeah.
You just let it up?
I let up. Going into my junior year, I worked my tail off. And before my senior year, you know, it was totally my fault. Not putting in the time, not, you know, just thinking I'm already that good in football. Hmm. And so that, you know, I deserve it.
Lord showed you that real quick.
Yeah. I had a decent year, but it wasn't
my junior year. Yeah, not like your junior year for sure.
So I just had to work harder. It was all my fault.
So then the NFL comes. It's the natural progression for it, but you don't get drafted.
Nope.
So then what? Is it like, well, let's see, construction. Maybe I'll start building homes, or was it football or bust?
Well, I mean, I had a plan. I was going to be a truck driver.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I thought truck drivers make good money. Me and my wife get on the road and hit the road.
See the country.
Yeah. And we went to school with the England brothers. So I was like, maybe I can get a job at the England Trucking Company and drive. And that was always the backup plan. But football worked out.
Yeah. Well, luckily, I don't know that being a truck driver would be, maybe. I don't know. Get to see the world for a while. But how did it do? Because you had to just walk on, right?
Yep. I essentially was a walk on. And they don't call it walk on in the NFL. It's a free agent.
You were essentially a free agent,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I was a rookie.
See how I changed what I said there? A free agent. Of course,
I totally
not a walk-on.
Know what I'm talking
about. Yeah, it's a sports thing.
So I was a rookie free agent. And
like Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
In that movie, right?
Invincible. Exactly, yeah. Like him. Yeah. I'm actually good friends with Vince.
Do you really know him?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
I know him. Because he understood my story.
Uh-huh.
I was a walk-on there. And
for those who don't know, there's a movie called Invincible about a guy named Vince, and that's the story that we've now ventured into. Sorry about that.
So who was the actor? Was Mark Wahlberg.
Mark Wahlberg, yeah.
So I was a walk-on. Went and just didn't think I was ever going to make the team.
Did you have to bust balls again then? Because you slack off a little bit, you said, in the senior year. And then is it like, here we go, back to...
Yeah, so that was a rude awakening. It was a humbling experience. Not getting drafted was a product of not working hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't work hard going into my senior year, and so therefore I didn't get drafted. And so I had to go in as a a rookie free agent. And it happened in 2-a-days. I knew I can work hard. I love hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that I'm going to work harder than anyone here. And turned out I did. I mean, everyone can judge it for themselves, but I ended up making the team.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
What's it like? What's it like being a Mormon guy in the NFL?
You know, I think the Eagles is I always like try to use big words here and there. It's like an anomaly,
uh-huh.
Where it's not the norm.
Okay. How so?
The head coach is Mormon.
Okay.
Bunch of other players on the team are Mormon, and you get this sense of everyone treats each other as if they know everyone's Mormon. Not that the head coach, you know, everything kind of goes as the head coach goes.
Right.
So if our head coach is Mormon, you kind of see the way everyone treats each other with respect. And I'm not just saying only
Mormon.
And
everyone calls each other elder, which is weird.
Yeah. And brother.
Yeah, and brother. Way to go, brother. Yeah, you bet, brother. See you later, elder. Brother.
But he kind of, the thing that's not fair to other teams is I don't know what it's like on other teams. Mm-hmm. That's just how it feels like within the Eagles organization. Is Coach Reed kind of, he creates an environment where people are friendly to each other. There's no because you're this person or this person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the janitors are cool with us. The cafeteria, you know, everyone's pretty cordial with each other, have respect for each other.
Nice.
So, and as far as being Mormon, Chad Lewis, Justin, and a lot of these guys before me kind of set the standard. You know, this is how us Mormons do. And I was tested.
Sure.
You know, my rookie year, the running back's night out.
Were you married? Now you're married at this time, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm married. I got a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm you know, it's one of those things where I think I've been in 2 years now I've been married. So we're out there and running back's night out. We go out and we go grab something to eat and we're walking into this club and
you really quick realize what kind of club it is you're walking into.
There's a bunch of poles in this club.
What in the world?
So I turn around. I'm like, man, guys, I can't go in there. And they're like, come on, man. This ain't nothing but booty. And I was like, dude, I'm cool. I'll just wait out here for you guys. And they laugh about it. But I think they respected the fact that I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is not what we're about.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember calling my wife from the parking lot. I was like, man, these guys are crazy. They're over here trying to get me to go into the strip club. And but, you know.
She's like, get home. You've got home teaching to do tomorrow.
That had to be really hard for you, though, Reno, because you're brand new to the NFL. You're brand new to this team. You want to be accepted. You want to have friends. That's what they want to do. You know, peer pressure, I think, is one of the hardest things for anybody really to deal with.
Not at all.
Not for you.
Not for you. Good. No.
After all I've been through, as far as getting kicked out of school, I just got to the point where I just didn't care anymore. I didn't care what you thought. I don't know. Like, not even in high school. I don't know. Peer pressure is such a funny thing to where I just think, yeah, I can see myself being peer pressured in certain things, but there's things that are just like, nah, I don't know.
Yeah, I'll pass.
Yeah, that's not what I do.
Yeah.
So is everything pretty much black and white with you? Is there a lot of gray in your life, or is it all just, it's either this or it's not?
There's definitely a lot of gray in my life. Yeah. There is. But as far as feeling like someone's going to peer pressure me into something,
right?
It's like, no, I'd much rather just punch you in the nose. Like, I don't do well with bullies. I hate bullies. Right. I cannot stand bullies. And to me, that's the whole peer pressure thing where people pressure you, bullies try to, I hate that. I hate when people bully people.
But I'm sure you had to deal with that on the Eagles team because you had some characters on the team that had the big egos and that were the household names. And
you know what's funny? I think a lot of it has to do with our teachings in our church.
How so?
Say, for instance, like the whole Garmin thing.
Right.
Where some of these guys are like, you know, hey, look at the magic underwear.
Sure.
It's funny. Ha ha. Like, you know, what's funny is I don't think you could afford it. And they're like, what? And it's like, let's see, how much do you make? You make about, say you make about $250,000 a week. So you would pay $25,000 a month to feel good wearing these. Would you pay that?
Yeah.
And there's, you know, 10%.
Sure.
$25,000? What the heck? No, no. It's like I said, you can't afford these. And what I'm trying to get to with that is, for me, at the end of the day, they didn't pay my check.
Sure.
And, you know, they're not the one feeding my family. And as a Polynesian culture, we're God-fearing people.
Sure.
Like, I'm not scared of you. I am scared of the man upstairs.
Right.
You know, I want to make sure I'm cool with him.
Yeah.
Before I'm cool with you. So, no, not too... That's not that hard.
Did you feel like you had to learn that, though? I mean, you kind of talk about that, like, at BYU. Your girlfriend's name was Erica.
Mm-hmm.
You had that you got kicked out of BYU for. So what was going on at that point in your life where...
I can tell you ever been a 19-year-old boy. That's what that is.
No, I haven't. Woo! Light switch. Is that really, do you think, what it was? Or was it because you were having so much success at BYU, you kind of felt untouchable?
Yeah. No,
I
did.
You know what I mean? I mean,
I definitely did. You do get that blind confidence where because of certain things, and I think it happened to me when I moved back to Utah. Like after being in the NFL, retiring from the NFL, moving to Utah.
Why'd you retire, just real quick?
You know, it was one of those things where honestly, I can say I never been cut.
Right.
Every year I've tried out in the NFL, I made the team.
Mm-hmm.
And or my last year where they just brought me back on the team.
Nice.
To where there were some price issues where my agents kind of priced me out of the league where they wanted more money for me to sign a contract and the teams ended up not doing it. But I started getting into different business ventures where it's amazing how much more money you can make out there.
Sure.
I mean, you take a company like Instagram,
right.
13, 12 employees, $1 billion in a year or so.
Right.
Like the opportunities out there are so much bigger than football. Like, you know, everyone looks at football and thinking, I don't know, it's opened my mind up to so much more out there in this world that you can do, that we have the capabilities of doing. And so it was easy to just walk away and not pursue it as much anymore.
I want to ask you a couple other things that I read about here in your Wikipedia. Do you ever wiki yourself? Have you ever looked yourself up on Wikipedia and been like, that's not true. That's true. What is this?
Every now and then.
Okay. This is what I want to ask you. It says that you took a part-time job at Chicky and Pete's.
Yeah.
So that's while you're playing NFL football and you're working the summertime at a Chicky and Pete's. Sounds like a...
It's a restaurant.
Doing what?
Seat people.
Really?
Like, I'm in your party.
What? Money wasn't good enough in the NFL? Or no, you just wanted to keep working?
Money was great. Don't get me wrong. Money was great. Money was scary. You know, going from like food stamps to walking in the mall and just thinking, I can buy the store.
Yeah.
It was scary. It was a scary feeling. And I just remember that off season, there was so much time where I had a lot of time. I mean, people don't realize we work for only like 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have 6 months off. And we do have, you know, little mini camps here and there. But we had all this time off. And I could see myself realizing that, well, if you're not making money, you're losing money.
Okay.
Like, if money's not coming in, you're spending money.
Sure.
Right.
And so during the off season when we were doing training, we'd go in, lift for an hour, and then we're done.
Mm-hmm.
They pay us $100 for that hour to go in and lift. And then we'd go to the mall and spend $300.
Mm-hmm.
And I just sat there. And if I didn't even buy anything, because I'm pretty cheap. If I didn't buy anything, I just was sitting there for 4 hours wasted, didn't do anything. So I was like, I'm just gonna get a job. And we'd always go to this place. They'd always take care of the players. We never had to pay. And I was sitting there one day and I asked the manager, it's like, would you guys hire me if I wanted to work here? And she thought I was kidding. She's like, shh, yeah, whatever. Like, you don't want to work. I was like, no, I'm serious.
No, I want to show people how many in your party and then sit them in their seats.
So then they said, yeah, you can come in whenever you want. You can just do a host because then all you have to do is sit people.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, all right, when can I start? You start right now.
I play football for the Philadelphia Eagles. How many in your party? I'll take you to your seat.
You got
to
realize the Eagles have the number one fans.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter where you play or not. They know who you are. So they're coming in and they're thinking it's a joke.
Yeah, where's the camera? Okay, this guy. Yeah. Sure.
No, but it was a sweet gig. It was pretty cool.
Okay, here's the other thing I want to talk to you about. This may get a little bit tender, but we've talked about a bunch of stuff. It says here, in July of 2011, you're charged with a second-degree felony for playing part in stealing more than $55,000 in gasoline. It's a lot of gasoline.
Yeah, we pulled up a jet. No, I'm just kidding.
So talk about that. What's that about?
Well, it's tough because I'm not allowed to talk about it per se. It's just one of those things where you definitely have to be careful who you surround yourself with, you know. And it's just an old buddy of mine's from high school, and we were told one thing and it wasn't what we were told. Mm-hmm. So as far as, I don't know, moving forward is one of those things that, like getting kicked out of BYU, where it's definitely a learning experience.
Sure.
It's definitely made me a lot more cautious of who I believe, mm-hmm. and what they say to me. But, you know, the more I think about it, the more I'm like, I'm still going to trust people.
Sure.
And if they end up lying to me and I end up getting in trouble again, I'm not going to go around in my life and not trust that people are telling me the truth.
Yeah, because what kind of life is that to not trust anyone?
I can't do that.
Right.
You know, and things are a little bit, you know, my family makes fun of me about gas all the time now. But I know who I am.
Are you on empty? You need to borrow my card? Here. Yeah. Go ahead and take my gas.
Oh, I'll tell you, there's not a week that goes by I don't get a gas joke. And for me, I know I didn't steal anything. So I can sleep at night knowing I didn't do that. But did I believe someone? Yeah. Is that illegal? I don't think it is.
So what are you doing now then? You're talking about moving forward. What today, moving on, what are you doing?
It's tough because there's so many different things that moving back to Utah, I kind of...
How long have you been back here for?
Since 08.
Okay.
So going on 4 years, I believe.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Moving back here was it was exciting. I was glad to come back to Utah. But it also gave me that false confidence to where you felt untouchable and you didn't have to worry about things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I wasn't one to spend money. I was a pretty cheap dude and whatever the frugal. I still don't know what frugal means. My wife always says that. You're not cheap, you're frugal. I was like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Anyways, and I saved my money. It wasn't, you know, the first thing I ever bought was a DVD player. I was like, yes, I got a portable DVD player. And then I bought a car and they're like, dude, I got me a Ford Taurus. Used.
Really? Yeah.
And I still have it. But I just wasn't into things. And I saved my money. But then I came here and, oh man, people can really take advantage of your money. Lost it all.
Really?
Yeah.
Everything from your NFL career just gone.
Gone. Mm. And it wasn't just, and the thing is, it's not like poor me. Dude, half the country went through it.
Sure.
You know, when the economy did what it did, the housing market. And it was just, to me, it's where football is such a great thing. It teaches you about turnovers. You know, when you get a turnover, you step up and you go back and you keep playing. And so it's kind of like the game of life for me where I just keep playing. One of the things that I try to do is be cool with those that are cool to me. So and I've like Bree's husband, Sean, and even Bree. Hers is where they take, you know, people take care of you. You take care of people.
Mm-hmm.
So even though I lost all financially, I still had a lot of great relationships out there where things are still progressing, you know.
So, like, let's just bottom line it though. What do you do? Like, you get up in the morning and do you work at Chickie and Pete's or where? What do you do?
I get on my phone and build relationships and put people together and hopefully get paid from it.
Nice. So, what do you mean that I'm trying to figure it out? What do you do?
Like, say I went.
Because that job sounds perfect for me. So if this is in fact a job.
Well, Reno is probably one of the best networkers that you'll ever meet.
But not multi-level marketing networking.
No, like professional networking.
Mm-hmm.
Just because everybody that knows Reno loves him. So he's really good at, like, if you need something, you mm-hmm. call Reno and be like, hey, so I need this. And he knows who to hook you up with. Like, okay. You know, when you walked in, he was on the phone with my dad because he's helping my dad with an environmental issue that he's going through because he owns the gas station. Sean and I were trying to get tires one day, and Reno has a guy that can get you, you know, a good deal on tires. He just knows so many people. So he's professionally networking people and then hoping to get some compensation.
I've got to get to where I can learn to monetize it.
Sure.
But I think one thing my parents are always like, you know, it always comes back. Mm-hmm. That they're taught me that you just keep helping people and it always comes back. And I didn't know when I was playing that talking to Sean and still being, and Sean was, we were good friends in high school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he wanted to go to a game, being able to, you know, get him to a game and different things like that, that one day I was going to need his help.
Sure.
You know, you never know, but you know, you keep taking care of people and it always comes back around. So.
Do you have a calling in your ward right now?
Yeah, I'm about to go Catholic.
Oh, really? Primary?
Scoutmaster.
Full blood Scoutmaster.
I've been the assistant Scoutmaster for about a year.
Uh-huh.
And they just made me the Scoutmaster 2 weeks ago.
All right. Summer camp coming up, right?
Camp Typhi, June 11th through the 15th.
It's a great camp.
Yep. We went last year. Good times. Got a lot of great kids. So the kids make it easy. But I got a couple guys in the ward, Brother Matua and Brother Miller, that as far as scouts goes, they're just
great about it.
Wood Badge. You ever heard of Wood Badge?
Mm-mm.
Oh, man. Go to Wood Badge.
Okay.
Go with the Polynesian ward if you can.
Yeah.
But it changed my life in scouts.
Huh.
I knew nothing. I don't even think I went past Tenderfoot or Weeblo, but I went to Wood Badge and it really changed my life as far as the importance of scouts. And so I'm all about scouts.
If you could pick a calling in the church, what would you pick?
The guy that rings the bell.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
How long would you do? Would you be like a long bell or like Morse code, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I'd mess around with it. I'd be the bell guy.
All right.
He did that answer really fast.
Yeah, I know. He's like, I've thought about this.
Bell guy.
Yeah, because Leo has it in our ward, and I'm jealous of him. My boy Leo has it, and every time he rings the bell, I always give him a hard time about it. Let me do it.
He's like, nope, it's my calling. Maybe one day, Brother Mahi, but right now.
He doesn't teach. He's in Sunday school, whatever position in Sunday school.
Mm-hmm.
But all his job is to ring the bell. That's his job.
Well, it sounds like a great call to me.
Yeah.
He doesn't teach. Never he just rings it. The bell. So,
what is your favorite part of your faith?
It's based on a perfect person, and it's for those. It's for all of us. It's for sinners, and we all have problems. You know. And so for me, it gives me hope that even through my struggles and my imperfections, that I can be anything I want to be and I can shoot for perfection.
Cool. Let me ask you this. If people want to get in touch with you, a lot of people, we give them the opportunity to get up on the Rammy Umptum is what we call it. An opportunity if you want people to either follow you on Twitter or friend you on Facebook or anything like that. Go ahead. Tell people how they can get in touch with you. But only do ways that you want people to get in touch with you. So don't give your phone number if you don't want people to call you.
I don't care. People can call me if they want.
Okay.
But it's, I'm new to the Twitter thing. I just getting used to it, but it's at Reno Mahe.
Okay. Which is RENOMAHE.
Yep. And Facebook sucks because I feel bad because I got like 1,000 people friend requests, but I can't accept any more people.
Mm-hmm. But people, we can set you up a fan page, you know.
I don't want to do a fan page.
No.
It feels silly.
A little pretentious, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't want fans. Yeah, I mean, I know there were fans there, and I don't mind fans when I was playing, but I'm not playing anymore. I'd much rather have friends, colleagues, whatever you want to call it, but I don't want any more fans.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does.
And my email is just renomahe@gmail.com.
Cool. So reach out to him. Anything else you want to ask him before we let him go?
I just wanted to ask you, Reno. So you've had to forgive a lot of people, I think, in your life, and you've had to be forgiven. So kind of touch on how that works for you. How, you know, like, I think it's awesome that you went back to BYU, because I think if it were me, I would have been like, forget them. You know, I'm going to go to another school and I'm going to beat them. But you know what I'm like, you forgave yourself first, I think, was the biggest thing, but then you forgave them for,
I think part of it is what we were like, something I learned, and it sucks because once you learn something, you're almost held accountable to that,
right?
Well, now you know,
right?
You know, and so one of it is that we are, that's like a commandment where we have to forgive.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, but then there's my wife has been a great example of that to me. And I had just fun little quotes here and there where letting people live rent free in your head, you know, and I just don't, it's just weighs you down when you worry about people that have done wrong to you. It, you know, like worrying about someone that lost a lot of your money, worrying about someone that got you into legal trouble. Like, no, I don't. Like, even my buddy that got me into this legal stuff, like, I forgave him pretty quickly. It was disappointing, all the repercussions from it.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, I wish he's okay. You know, I wish he's in a good place. I wish that he can, I don't know, I wish we could be friends again. Mm-hmm. But it's tough right now because legally you can't talk to him. You're not supposed to. So it's tough. You know, it's just, it doesn't make for a very happy life when you worry about things like that.
Right.
And people make mistakes. People have, I don't know. I've never had something to where I had to, you know, if someone hurt my kid, I think that'd be hard for me to forgive.
Mm-hmm.
I know I would have to, but I guess for me at the end of the day, I'm not perfect and I mess up every day. And so I would want people to forgive me. So how hypocritical is it for me to not forgive people that mess up? When it comes to driving, I'm going to run you off the road. That's a little different, but I don't know. I try to be. I'm not saying I'm good at it, but if I'm not happy, it's because I'm holding something bad in. And you know what I mean? So you just got to let it go. And right. I think a lot of it comes from football. You know, drop passes,
yeah, you gotta,
miss blocks.
Yeah, you got to pick up and go on. You can't be thinking about them.
You got to go. You got to keep going. You got to keep going. There's more of a game to play. And for me, it's just a game of life. Where things are going to happen, whether it be financial, whether it be whatever it might be. He's just got to pick up and keep going. You know?
Awesome.
Well, we hope that this podcast has nourished and strengthened your body.
And you will take these stories into your daily lives.
And that if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you.
On the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat. On the back row, we really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.